Hey guys, it's Jamie here with Movie Moan here at ThinkBeforeIThink.com. We've been having a conversation for the last half hour that we probably could have broadcast, but I was too lazy to hit the record button, so you won't hear it. But anyway, with me as always is Mr. Phil G. Phil, say hello, sir.
Hello, everybody. I really don't have much else to say. It's not been that much of an eventful week.
In a bad way or a good way?
Oh, no, I'm fine. I'm absolutely fine.
Okay.
How are you?
I'm all right, you know. I'm worried about my job, but we're not going to go into any details about that. We're just going to leave it at that. But we have a special guest. Guest, say hello.
Hello, everyone. This is Ed Hawken. You may remember me from the Chud boards, where I post very heavily and often. And I also harass another guy over on another podcast via the phone.
Oh, really? Which one is that?
That would be Podcast, actually, with Rob Hughes. I don't know if you've heard that one. It's a very good one. I don't want to come off like a shill now.
No, not at all. Whore. Whore away.
Yeah, no, it's very good. I mean, I don't have anything to do with it. I'm trying to harass them into getting me on, but
this will be proof.
I guess I got to have something a little bit special because I was the one who created the whole Hal Sparks thing, and I'm particularly proud of that.
You created Hal Sparks?
Rob had put a picture of himself online, and his facial expression was such that it's like, hey, this guy looks like Hal Sparks. And then I proceed to ask about that in a voicemail, and the legend continues.
Holy 2002, you know. I mean, that would have been such a great thing to tell people, like, that, you know, boy, you look like Hal Sparks back then, back when his heyday was doing iHeart, the fill-in-the-blank shows. They don't even think they do those anymore in VH1. Now they're kind of past that. Now they're the let's do white trash reality shows.
They were doing it for they did it for I Love the 90s, and what seems to be going on now is that they're basically do second, third, fourth series with some other shtick. Now I enjoyed the I Love the 80s series when it first came out. I thought it was kind of funny at the time, and the 70s one also, but the 90s, whew, that's a bit of a stretch. And I remember hearing a rumor about that one point they were going to do one for this decade, or I like to call it the 00 decade. I know the Brits like to call it the noughties or whatever the hell it's called.
That's true, Phil?
Well, I don't. I hate calling it the noughties myself.
That's kind of bad, though. We assume, like, Phil just speaks for all British people. It's like, how's that Susan?
For the sake of this podcast, I do.
How is that Susan Boyle doing, you know?
Oh, jeez. Let's move on.
What? I mean, I'm just asking. How is she?
I'm sure she's fine. I don't know her personally.
You don't watch that show? What's the X Factor? Is that the one it is? Britain's Got
no,
Talent?
No, I don't. I watch the only hour of television I watch every week is the UK version of The Apprentice. That's all I watch.
That's still who? So, oh my God, is Trump on there? Or?
No, it's his British version.
Does he equally have like a dead cat on his head that presents that quote a hairpiece?
No. Trump is his name is Sir Alan Sugar. He's a UK tycoon and he's practically hairless.
Sir Sugar
is Peter Burns still out there? And do his lips still look like inflated dinghies?
They do indeed. I don't know where he is at present, but the less I see of him at all in any media is the better for me and my sanity, because I just think that's. Look, I like all people and all orcs of life. Orcs, is that a good
orcs,
one?
Orcs, that's
he
so...
He does look like an orc.
Ooh,
but he
mean.
Just... I'm sorry, look.
Oh, I don't care. Oh, no, I don't mind. I mean, I'm not an
no,
orc.
No, please, go on.
I mean, like, you know, Joan Rivers is an orc, and I'll call her that, you know. She just won...
Who, ironically
she...
enough, just won the Celebrity Apprentice, yeah.
That's right, and I didn't... I knew that show was a bunch of nonsense when they had Tom Green on there, you know, because I'm sure they probably threw him a sandwich every week in order to keep him on. What? They probably did.
Yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
Coke with it, you know?
He probably enjoyed that sandwich quite a bit, too.
Exactly. A Coke and a smile.
I'd rather see him than Andy Dick.
Is Andy Dick? Was he on there? Really?
No. Oh. I'm just saying I'd rather have, you know.
They're interchangeable, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
There was a point in time when Tom Green was considered cool, ironically enough, 10 years ago,
yeah,
which is so
I
funny.
I hate that part of the. I hated those years. So
exactly the dark hours, you know.
Yes.
You know, but yeah, we're supposed to be talking about movies, but yet we've spent the last 10 minutes talking about random British and American pop culture.
Yes, let's get back on track here.
Let's get back on track, goddammit. So if you're Chris Hemsworth, it's been a pretty good week, and the week hasn't even started yet. You know, you're in Star Trek. Everyone remembers you because you're you're Kirk's daddy who gets his head blown off or whatever, and now you're Thor. That's pretty cool, actually. That's, you know, good for him.
So this has been confirmed.
Officially, no, but it's from Nikki Finke of Deadline Hollywood Daily. And,
Nikki Fink, yeah.
Fink, okay. I don't know.
Nikki, well, whatever. Yeah.
I've heard it pronounced both ways, and
I'm sure she doesn't care either way.
I don't know. I mean, there's been – I don't know. She follows people, strangely. Not
that
me.
She does.
You know.
That she does.
But anyway, very angry writer she is. And then I saw her picture, and I realized, like, I would be angry too, to be honest. Because she can – you know, she's awful. I mean, I love her writing, but goddamn, she's catty.
Oh yeah, no, no doubt. Her column is posted over here in the LA Weekly every week, and no, absolutely, there is definitely a snarkiness to it. But there is relevant information. It's not like you're dealing with basically, you know, dead air with like Peter Bart, you know, irrelevance with that guy.
You mean Sunday Morning Shootout, and formerly known as Sunday Morning Shootout. On this week's show, we talk about – I will say that show was a much – that was an upgrade from the Entertainment Tonight. It's like, what was it like kissing so-and-so on the set of the movie? Oh, it was so much fun. We got along great. Ugh. I was hoping someone would have asked that to Christian Bale, like, hey, how's McGee doing? You guys get along great? Cut to him screaming at McGee or whoever he was screaming at, actually. I don't know who he was. But anyway.
It's a DP on the set, I believe.
It's a DP who, like – it's
it
funny because –
director of photography just – and he lost his shit basically right there. I've never, you know, I think it's just one of those incidents that
it happens,
you know,
all the time.
Obviously not meant to be shown, but
someone bleeped it. Someone really didn't like Dark Knight, is what happened. You know, he got so angry. I'm guessing, I don't know, but back to Thor. We'll get to Terminator.
Back to Thor. Here.
Yeah, so he's also been cast in the Red Dawn remake that I don't care about whatsoever. I never watched Red Dawn when it first came out. It's only known for being very right-wing and very PG-13, and that's about it. I'm assuming that in this remake they're fighting Al-Qaeda, I guess. I don't know. Are they?
The word I had heard regarding the Red Dawn remake that it was somehow going to involve the Chinese – in that, and I heard this offhand from like a third-hand source, was that it was going to involve the Chinese, that because we borrowed – the Chinese were basically funding the United States, that they somehow wanted to protect the investment by going in. I see no need for this remake. I mean, Red Dawn is a product of its time. It's John Milius. You're basically seeing it to see communists get shot, and it should stay there. There's – you know, it's just another unnecessary remake in my view.
Any thoughts on Mr. Hemsworth? Did you guys like him in Star Trek? Because I heard some people, my best friend Chip, hated him. I mean, when I got his reaction, he's like, yeah, it was good. I really liked it. That dude who played his dad was fucking terrible, though, Williams. He did tell me that. And then I heard other people say that he was terrible, too. I thought he was fine. But
it makes absolutely no sense to me to criticize a performance of a guy who's in it that little. It makes no sense to me, unless he completely fluffed every single one of his lines, which
he was on screen for 3 minutes. I mean, I don't know how you can criticize it.
He was sad too the whole time. So how can you be mad at him? It's like he's dying. You know, he's you know, not the real man, the character. But unless of course they decide to put him in the sequel with all this, let's bring Khan in. You know,
Jesus.
I'm sure they'll figure out some way. Like, we'll segue into our next story as we finally found out what William Shatner's cameo was in the Star Trek requel or reboot or whatever. And thank God wiser heads prevailed, or Shatner's ego got the better of him, because, you know, he basically was refusing to do the cameo. Thank God. For you guys that don't know, it's basically at the end of the film when the two Spocks meet and they say, hey, what's up, and you should go to Starfleet, yada yada. He still doesn't believe him, so he gives him this little DVD, apparently, and he clicks a button on it, and all of a sudden a holographic image shows up of William Shatner saying, I guess, happy birthday to Spock or something like that. That was the cameo.
Oh, Christ.
Yeah, that was the cameo. And you think, like, you know, half the audience is going to laugh going, like, so Chris Pine turns into that? You know. But, I mean, thank God that was cut. Man.
Oh, no, I agree. That would have definitely pulled everyone out of the movie. It would have been very much a black mark on the film. You know, and, you know, Shatner can hem and haw all he wants. It was good to keep him out of it because – Nimoy can act, I think.
Well, he's only playing
Shatner
Spock all
cannot.
The time. That's all he ever plays. Everyone's like, he's the better actor. Like, he always plays Spock. Even when he's doing, like, those 1970s voiceover for documentaries. They're basically saying, like, do it like Spock.
I guess, yes.
I'm assuming. I mean, like, you know. It's better than him, though. It's better than being, like, you know, Walter Kingan. I mean, what do you do if you're him? I mean, that's pretty bad.
Yeah.
I mean, no offense against him. I'm sure he's a nice guy and shit, but, you know.
No, I saw him once. This was, like, 10 years ago at a book fair. And, no, he seemed like a very friendly guy. I mean, I wasn't there for that, but I was just sitting through – because he apparently wrote a book at the time, and he was fine. I guess him and the young Chekhov could have had a wessel off or something like that. I'm not quite sure, but –
But ironically enough, that kid is Russian, and yet his accent sounded fake. I thought the kid was fine, Anton Yeltsin, but
– Oh, yeah, no, he's a fine actor. I think he was in Huff with Hank Azaria, which is a show I didn't particularly care for, but I thought he was very good.
He was in Huff? Did not know that.
I think he was. Now he's on Terminator.
Isn't it ironic? That dude is like, he's now got like two movies in a month. They're the two biggest films of the month, and yet arguably nobody cares about him. And I don't say that meanly, but you go like Chris Pine, everyone's just like oohing and aahing over him, and yet he's got pretty much nothing for the rest of the year. And man, granted, it's a beefier role, but like nobody seems to know. It's like, oh, that's right, this kid's in the two biggest movies of the fucking summer.
Well, what the hell? I'll care about him. He clearly needs somebody to care about him, so here I am.
I don't say that
here
meanly.
Here I am, Anton.
I'm sure he'll appreciate that. But of course, the question.
I hope he does.
Yeah, he does care, actually. I'm sure. What was that flick he did, Charlie Bennett? Like, Phil's a member of the Charlie Bennett fan club. You know? I love that movie. with a pre Iron Man Robert Downey Jr., no less.
Right.
So,
right.
Back when
that
Robert.
Movie, I think that movie had been held over for a couple of years, though, if I'm not mistaken. I remember. Yeah, it was. Because I know Zodiac had came out, and then. I think it was Charlie Bartlett or something like that, just showed up, you know, and then just died off.
Really?
So,
I didn't know.
From what I remember.
He does look very young in that flick. And granted, he looks young in Star Trek, too. But he's supposed to be playing 17, and he just doesn't look it. But he's fine. Again, I'm not going to bitch at him. I'm sure he'll get more to do in the sequel and shit. Hopefully he will. But speaking of Terminator, that goes to the third story that we have. Apparently the rights to Terminator 5 are up in the air, which is interesting because MGM had it. And let's see, Warner Brothers made T3, and that made some enough money. And then MGM got first right to refusal on T4. They passed, and there's some kind of legal brouhaha, basically meaning that if MGM wants a new Terminator 5, they get first right to refusal again, and they might take it. Granted, they aren't in any financial shape to even really make the movie, to be honest. I mean, they got bought by Sony 2 years ago, and the few projects they are making are all like $200 million productions, like Hobbit, Bond 3. They claim they're doing RoboCop with Aronofsky, which I don't believe is going to happen for a second. Sadly, I might add, I would be game to see
all. I forgot all about that.
Exactly. They made a big brouhaha over that flick and for next summer, and guess what? It's, you know, it's almost June, and we haven't heard fucking diddly shit
on
the front. What's that one word?
No, yeah. There isn't any. We haven't heard a word on that project. And thankfully, that's a good thing in my view. There's no reason to continue it. Actually, although if we could wipe the two sequels off the face of the earth, that'd be even better because the movie is perfect in and of itself. It's of its time, yes, but it's self-contained just like the way I think the first Predator is. There's no reason to, you know, you could go do something if you want, but it would just be unnecessary in my view.
So you're not really nuts about this Robert Rodriguez Predator reboot sequel whatever?
I'm fine with that. I mean, there's nothing, you know, he can do what he wants. I mean, it'd be interesting for him to actually do, you know, just not do a strictly sugary kids movie. I know he's in the midst of a very bitter divorce. I know it's been taking up a lot of his time. That's probably why Sin City 2 never got off the ground. He could do what he wants. I'm sure it'll be a lot better, a hell of a lot better than Aliens versus Predator. And definitely Predator 2. So I, you know, why not? I mean, it's a character that could, you know, you could perhaps use again. I wouldn't be completely against it. I just, what I would not want to see is like the return of Dutch. Don't do that.
that's a good one. Let's see. What do you think, Phil?
Well, just regarding Predator, personally, I don't think there's anything left to be said about the Predators as a species. I don't think there's any. I could be wrong, could be completely wrong, but I don't think we're going to get anything interesting in another Predator movie, anything that will excite me. I think it's done, and I think it should just be left But I suppose it's called Predators, isn't it? So I imagine it will be a lot of predators fighting each other in the jungle or something on their home world.
I wonder if it's going to be like that old script. Is it that old Rodriguez script, or is he doing a new one? That one he wrote from like 97, what was like would have cost $100 million or something. Is it that one, or is it just a brand new one?
I think the politics will dictate he'll have to write a new script to some degree. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I haven't heard a word either regarding that. Unless they happen to take one of the plots from the Predator novels. And I kid you not, they're actually novels, just like there are Halo novels. You know, your guess is as good as mine as to regards to whether or not they're going to, you know, what'll be the plot of Predators.
So what do you guys think of the Terminator 5 situation? I don't think MGM's going to – they're not going to be able to financially even make it, in my opinion. I could be wrong.
No chance.
I don't see how that happens. My guess is Warner Brothers ends up fitting the bill. I mean, you feel bad for Warner Brothers. They're the ones who were responsible for T4 even really getting to where it is. And that's, of course, because, you know, how many projects that were supposed to come out this summer either got delayed or canceled or, you know, postponed, whatever. I mean, there was the Superman sequel, which we don't know where that stands right now. They're going to make it eventually. Justice League, which is dead. What else? Clash of the Titans was supposed to come out this summer. It's been pushed back a year. A number of other things they kept. Akira, remember that? That was supposed to happen.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they announced
BioShock.
That. BioShock.
BioShock was Universal.
That was Universal. And that won't happen either, but still.
Right.
There's no way
that's
happening.
That's all I mean.
That's not going to happen, my friend. I don't see how that happens.
You can go through that entire list and be thankful, actually, that none of that stuff's going anywhere. To me, Akira is you can't really do that live action. I mean, frankly, because at least for me anyway, and I'll probably look like a tool for saying this, you still couldn't explain the end to me, even if you tried. As for the Terminator 5 situation, I wish I could say more about it. I'm a bit in the dark. I just know the end result, regardless of what happens, Harlan Ellison will sue somebody. That's my prediction.
I was hoping Harlan Ellison was going to bitch about Star Trek, but Sci-Fi Buzz is not on TV anymore, so he doesn't have a platform. Because I used to love to watch him on TV to bitch about something. I didn't even know he wrote science fiction novels. I knew him as that crazy, cranky old man who would still point at the camera and say something really insane. The one I remember, and I actually do love the man for this, is that I used to buy those old Marvel cards, the collector cards, and he said how they were ripping off kids. And he said, like, these are ripping you off because you're getting the same shit every time. You think you're not. And it's almost like he was following me, which is kind of creepy, actually. But, so that's when I knew, like, this dude knew his shit. That, and he explained the whole, Starship Troopers situation that was going on with the film adaptation. I thought that was really ballsy, him going out against Sony and saying, like, fuck these guys.
Right. Well, no, you could definitely say he's definitely his own guy. He's just a very angry, you know, pissed off guy all the
bitter
time.
Bitter man.
He's a very, very bitter man. The guy obviously is going to fight for his, you know, creative content, but it almost goes to such an extreme. Just it seems like it's ridiculousness. Although I got to watch myself. I could be hit with a process server at any moment regarding this comment. I could be nailed for slander.
He's probably
here.
Listening right now. Since he followed me as a 12-year-old, he might be listening to me as a 25-year-old. So I don't know.
Tapping our phones as we speak.
He could be, dude. He needs, you know. I don't know. I mean, I figured other people would be tapping our phones in terms of the rich and famous. Like, you know, McG, as much as I badmouth him for talking out of his ass all the time. And now Terminator's coming out in like 3 days, and the word is – well, what word is there? They won't even release the embargoes on the reviews. That gives you an idea. That gives you an idea, folks, how the movie is.
There's been no buzz on it. I don't know if Phil has heard anything, but there's been no buzz. All there's been has been releases because I was hearing about this from another podcast about basically drips and drabs of footage being released. But you hear no words, and it seems very suspect even that we're so close to what – is it coming out on Wednesday, I guess?
Friday. Thursday. Sorry.
Okay. There should have been some word by now. Even like some funky, you know, user review at AICN should have came out saying something, and there's been nary a word. You know, that's pretty suspect. The only time that's ever been was – maybe been like no reviews and it basically didn't matter for me was like Crank 2, but that's Crank 2 for crying out loud.
Which I didn't see, so, you know.
It's interesting because the way I was gauging it was that there was clearly a momentum of hype building on this movie. I mean, the last trailer deeply impressed me. The posters have been fantastic. Jamie was telling me in previous conversations friends who were saying that's the only movie I want to see is this Terminator 4 movie.
Friends at film school, they said it's the only thing they want to see this summer.
Yes, and so
I said, stay in film school, you dumb shits. So, go ahead.
So I was thinking that we were on the build up to something huge here, and then it really is like a balloon that's had the air taken out of it in the last couple of weeks, because all of a sudden, what word there is slowly trickling out, and the word is meh. The best way to put it. It's okay. And some people, I mean, we're hearing these vague rumblings about the ending, or the ending that was and the ending that is, and that it isn't a very good ending, and about where it will... I mean, it's one of those forced endings. It's not like a Terminator 5 could go in any direction. It's Terminator 5 will have to be in this direction, and it's not a direction that people are particularly excited about.
Fuck it, we'll give a spoiler warning right now.
I'm not sure I even understand it yet. I'm trying to go spoiler warnings.
If you want to
go whole hog, will you?
Oh, really? Because, right. I mean, that ending they originally going was brilliant. And that was the ending. We were told this a year ago. Peter and I had some sources, and they told us, like, nope, that's real. Like, it's not the ending anymore, but that was the ending. And it was awesome, because it makes sense why Worthington was only in one movie. You know, it makes perfect sense. And why you got Bale signed up for 3. Worthington for none. He signed up for multiple films. That's just standard operating procedure, but they're not going to bring him back, obviously. And sadly, that's not the ending. I mean, it leaked, and the one thing we don't know, and we never will know, because McGee just doesn't know how to tell the truth, is that, understandably, mind you, is that whether or not that ending was even filmed. We just don't know if they even shot it. They might have.
Never see it. If it was filmed, we won't see it.
I would hope. I mean, I would love to see that ending if it was like the Dawn of the Dead original ending. Like, granted, I don't know if it was ever shot, but we'll never know that one either. That's another reference that I'm throwing out there.
It's like the original ending to Little Shop of Horrors where everybody dies. They just won't put it on DVD officially. You'll have to find it on YouTube.
They did put it on a DVD, sir. I mean,
they did technically, and then they recalled it a day or two afterwards.
Yeah. Here's a better example of a lost ending would be the supposed thing at the end of Full Metal Jacket where Joker goes on a kill crazy rampage. Kubrick saw it and proceeded to burn the negative. So now that is a lost ending. Perhaps it could be the caliber of that.
Is that true though? Did he really do that?
Oh, that's a good question.
I don't know. I mean, there's these crazy stories. People think like Kubrick did all these crazy things because he just didn't give the interviews. Everyone just assumes like he's fat, he's got a beard, he doesn't talk to the press. It means he's crazy. And he did kind of look crazy because he did look like he lived in a cave for 50 years. And it's like, no, he didn't live in a cave. He just lived in London. And apparently people didn't know the difference, but still.
There was a great interview in The Last Empire magazine with Jack Nicholson talking about the making of The Shining. And sort of he tries his best to clarify some rumors about Kubrick and what he was really like. And
seems
like he was a decent person. Well, oh. Yeah, just basically that he wasn't an asshole. He was just, you know, he was just shy.
I get that, but also like Jack Nicholson, like, are you really gonna be an asshole to Jack Nicholson? Like, he's one of the few people who, you know, I mean, like, young people still think he's cool. That is so rare with Hollywood, with film industry in general, that's so youth-oriented. That, like, in 10 years from now, if he's still alive, he'll do some movie that's gonna appeal to the next generation of kids that'll know him for that movie role. In the same way that, like, we knew him from, like, Batman and the Few Good Men, and then, like, Generation Force knew him from shit like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest and what else? Like, Terms of Endearment. Now this generation knows him from shit like, what's the
Anger Department? Management.
Mars Attack.
Anger Management? Mars Attack. Yeah, that would...
Schmidt, only because of Kathy Bates being topless is infamous.
Yes,
so.
Which is a great movie, actually. And, I can't even top that. I was gonna say something witty, but you said Kathy Bates topless. I was like, I don't know what to say.
that disarms everything.
It does. You know, that's
like
a
nuclear drop, quite frankly.
That's the kind of flick that like my folks liked that movie, and they're prudish towards shit like that, like nudity and shit. Even though it was a good movie, so that shows you the power of Jack Nicholson, I think.
Well, let me put the question to you guys. Unfortunately, folks, I don't get to review Terminator Salvation next week. It doesn't come out in this country until the start of June. It's another 3 weeks away for me, which is unfortunate, but I'll live. I'm not really that excited, especially not now. So I put the question to my two learned colleagues. This is your last chance to call it. How well would the movie do next weekend in America, and how's it going to turn out? Is it actually going to be a good movie, or is it going to be a car wreck that everybody hates, especially the diehard Terminator fans?
It's going to win the weekend. There's no doubt about that. They're pushing this thing too hard, but I don't know. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, sir. Go ahead. You're a guest.
Oh no, thank you. Well, anyway, I'm not. I don't like to prognosticate on box office. That's. I know some people love doing that. I personally don't try to even attempt that. I think Jamie is right. It will probably be top of the week. I think the question will be as to whether or not it will actually be good or fairly, as they say, middling. We could, you know, it's possible it could experience, you know, what Wolverine did, which has had a very large opening but an extreme drop off. And the fact that there's been no word on this is not a good sign, because you think if it's good, they're going to want to spread that buzz around. You know, there's no disadvantage to have good word be pushed around, because it's going to help encourage the word of mouth.
Exactly. They did it with Trek. They're doing it with Up. They're already letting Up get reviews out. And you know,
to be fair, there was no word on Angels and Demons either.
Yeah, and
yes, exactly.
Oh, is that supposed to like defeat our argument? I mean, Angels and Demons.
No, I'm
AKA,
just saying that.
AKA, like, you know, where's my paycheck? Because I mean, I saw the Da Vinci Code, and I mean, look. Yeah, exactly. Look, I mean, I don't know how to put this to words, but like, it takes a lot to offend me. It really does. Yes, I'm Baptist, and yet I will sit through The Last Temptation of Christ because it's a good movie. It's kind of weird, but it's a great film. I'm not. It takes a lot to offend me. I was offended by the Da Vinci Code. You know why? It had nothing to do with what the movie was trying to say. I was offended by how goddamn boring it was. It's like you've got this movie with all this talented cast, pretty capable director, the material that you could have made something out of, and no one cared. It was like, fuck it, I'm making a lot of money. This is going to make money because it's popular. I don't care. And it was so boring.
Well,
that's why I was
offended. Let me chime in on that. The fact is, if you had tried even reading the book, you knew – straight away that it was going to be terrible. I read one of Dan Brown is just not good at all. And because I tried reading the Da Vinci Code, it was terrible. Couldn't get through it. The only book I ever read of his through was Deception Point. This was years ago. If they try to, which I think there may have been some word about trying to make that into a film. I have no idea. But if you ever try reading that book, that ending's going to piss you off to no end. And you'd have to know the story. In the book, but you're absolutely right. It's you had quality people, but the source material blows, and the fact is nothing was done to really try to, you know, help make it better. But once again, if the source material blows to such a point, you can only work with what you got here. So I don't necessarily know if you know if the director of the cast or Ron, you know, if Tom Hanks had a better wig, you know, we would have had some better here.
They gave him a haircut, you know. You know when this movie is bad, when all the advanced reviews say critics and audiences agree it's better than the Da Vinci Code. It's like that is the world's tallest midget argument. That doesn't mean anything. You're still a short motherfucker. You know, what's that matter? You know, and it made $48 million this weekend, opened to number one. The estimates have it at, and yet Star Trek opened to number two, or opened, continued at number two, $43 million, only dropped 44%. How badly will Angels and Demons plummet next weekend? Because Trek, I wouldn't be surprised if Trek ends up being at number three next weekend and Demons goes further down. I mean, Trek has clearly got the staying power here.
Yep.
Oh, no, I agree. Trek is, yeah. Oh, no, Phil, go ahead.
Oh, no, say, I was going to talk about the film Angels and Demons because I saw it, but now's not the time. Oh. Well, clearly, not yet.
Yeah, who wants to talk about it? Because we're talking about it right now anyway. Yeah, go ahead, man. Go ahead, bud.
You're all right. That's all right. Okay, then. Well, you might be shocked to hear this, but actually, I enjoyed Angels and Demons. I enjoyed it more than I thought I was going to. It's a 6 out of 10, which is a lot better than I thought it was going to be. It has two fatal weaknesses which kill it and stop it from being a good movie, but I did enjoy it. I enjoyed it for two reasons.
What were the fatal weaknesses?
I'll talk about the good points first. Number one, the movie is absolutely stunning to look at. I mean, the location photography, the cinematography, you really do feel like you're in Vatican City for 2.5 hours. It really is. And I'm always impressed when a movie is able to immerse me like that in a real location and make me feel like I'm there and establish the geography of the location that well. And this movie did that. So I really, really was, even though nothing interesting was being said by the characters, I could just look at the pretty scenery and say, oh, I've never been to Vatican City. This is nice. It's a cheap airline ticket. This is lovely. So I was able to look at the location photography, and it was very nice. Also, the only performance that keeps the movie interesting is Ewan McGregor, who plays actually a very, very interesting character, who I really shouldn't say that much about, but I suppose I'm going to have to in a bit when I talk about the weaknesses. But he basically plays the Pope's Mr. Spock, if you will. Like, he's the second in command. He's the advisor. He's the man who uses...
Does that mean the Pope gets in his face? It's like, your mama's so ugly, and then all of a sudden Ewan McGregor gets all angry and shit?
Well, no. It's kind of like... Go ahead.
Let me chime in just briefly. I don't want to, you know, I admit this could be somewhat of a stupid comment, but does at any point Ewan McGregor have full frontal nudity in the movie? Because right? It is Ewan McGregor.
No. It's
in his contract. Must show penis on screen.
Must drop trowel.
There is no self-flagellation like, what's his name, Paul Bettany in the last movie. I'm sorry to disappoint you. That never happens. But he's kind of like how, you know, old Mr. Spock and old Kirk in Star Trek 2, like, fully accepting this, like you'd say, you know, the Pope would be sitting there in his chair and Ewan McGregor would go up to him and say, at least we know he doesn't have Genesis, or keep nodding like I'm still giving orders. That's what it's like. That's what he's like. He's that Mr. Spock. He's very, very interesting character, though. He's got a funny accent. It's kind of, it's half Irish, half... Vatican City, general European. It's a bit odd. And of course, the head of the Cardinals is played by, I hope I can pronounce this, Armin Müller-Stahl or something like that. He's basically, he's the guy you get whenever you want a European actor of a certain age to be in your movie. He's just generally European. He doesn't have a specific accent. He's just generally European. I always talk like this.
It's always Syrian Hines, basically, and selling
cigars. Basically,
and Alvin Boney. It's like one is not available. You can pull out the little index card. Who else is available?
Well, he was in the international this year, so he's on my list. I'm watching him. I'm telling him to stop being in crap and annoying me. But anyway, there he was. So here we go with the bad points of the movie. Number one. As far as plot and exposition goes, nothing has been learned from Da Vinci Code. Absolutely nothing. Yes, they're on the move while they're doing this. They are lucky that in this book, they are lucky to be dealing with a plot which actually has something more interesting driving it forward than Da Vinci Code. If it wasn't, then nothing would be different. It would be exactly the same as Da Vinci Code. In this movie, it just so happens that the entire movie takes place over the course of a couple of hours, over one night, and they're out to start a bomb from blowing up Vatican City. So that immediately makes it a little bit more exciting than Da Vinci Code. But the fact is, they're still just talking and talking about the plot. This movie deals with a lot of Vatican terminology, a lot of ancient Latin words. And of course, in order to explain what these Latin words mean, the characters, who already know what these Latin words mean, say the Latin word and then say the explanation of that word immediately afterwards, just for us. But all it does is annoy and confuse us because we know these characters already know what the Latin words mean and shouldn't have to tell each other what the explanations are as well. And if you took out the explanations and just let the Latin words in, or vice versa, you'd have an hour-long movie. But instead we get both, and so we have it a 2.5-hour movie. Secondly, the last 20 minutes of this movie defy description, and I'm going to have to go into spoilers here.
Okay, so go ahead. I'm not going to watch it.
They find...
Yeah. There's no Ewan McGregor nude. Dude, like, Ewan McGregor doesn't show his penis in the movie.
Yeah, consider me uninterested if there's no full frontal Ewan McGregor nudity, so go right
ahead. Well, you know, I didn't want to lie to you. I would like to tell you what you'd
Unless
like
it's in the European version.
It's not true. So anyway, they find, around the two-hour mark, they find the bomb. It's an antimatter bomb. And despite the fact that the lady scientist says, don't touch it, they do touch it quite severely, actually, and start shaking it around a lot. And she says, basically, I don't think I'm going to have enough time to defuse this. It's going to go off very soon. And they haven't evacuated Vatican City. There's been like 5 scenes over the course of the movie where they've discussed evacuating Vatican City, but they haven't for some reason. I'm still trying to figure that out. But anyway, they haven't. And she says, I don't think I can disarm this in time. And so all of a sudden, huge close-up on Ewan McGregor. His eyes go wide. No! And so he grabs drops the bomb and legs it out of the Vatican, and he goes into his helicopter. He's a helicopter pilot, by the way, in exposition that is dealt with so clunkily that you know he's going to fly a helicopter.
Reese can fly?
And he does. Oh, yes, he can. Nice. And he flies the helicopter, and all of a sudden, Hans Zimmer's music goes very choir-like, very epic, very angelic. Everybody looks up into the sky as Ewan McGregor takes off straight up vertically in his helicopter with the bomb. You think he's going to sacrifice himself and take up the helicopter and the bomb as high as he can into sky and blow it up there in the sky so no one will get hurt. And just as this is about to happen, Ewan McGregor becomes the equivalent of a Cobra soldier in a G.I. Joe cartoon and parachutes out of the helicopter as it's about to explode. And it's not just that. If it was just that and it was a stuntman and a parachute, maybe I could deal with it. But no. Oh, of course not. It's CGI rubber doll Ewan McGregor and CGI horrible-looking, not at all convincing parachute Ewan McGregor leaping out and doing impossible human movements as he flies around like Spider-Man around Vatican Square and just goes wee wee wee, and the helicopter explodes, and he goes sort of, because the blast radius of the explosion still makes everybody fall over and all the carts and stuff, and everybody falls over and the journalists fall off their vans and stuff, and Ewan McGregor starts flying around wildly and he's celebrated as a hero because he stopped the bomb. And then of course the movie makes the most critical mistake. Of course, where the actual identity of the villain is this big secret and this big revelation and big twist at the end. In Da Vinci Code, it all sort of, the revelation all sort of happened near the end and you could just about accept it. In this movie, the bomb has exploded. We've been led to believe that Stellan Skarsgård, who is the chief of the Vatican police, is the big Illuminati villain because he's been killed. And the bomb's gone off. So we think, hooray, the day is saved, and Ewan McGregor's going to be the next Pope now. And then the movie keeps going on and on and on for another 20 minutes. And because Tom Hanks's eyebrows are arched in a certain way, and he's still talking in that suspicious chin-stroking manner, you know he's still thinking, I have not put together the complete puzzle here. Something is going on. And you know the only reason the movie is still going on is because the villain is still out there, and we all know who the villain is because there are literally no other suspects. Everybody else is dead except Ewan McGregor, and so we're just sitting there looking at our watches waiting for Tom Hanks, the big brain, to figure out that Ewan McGregor is the villain. By a simple process of elimination, he should already know it's Ewan McGregor. But no, luckily there was a security camera in the room where Ewan McGregor explains his evil plots. That this whole thing has been manufactured so he can become the next Pope to Stellan Skarsgård, and then he framed him, and they look at Stellan Skarsgård's laptop, which had a video feed into that room, and look at it in crystal clear clarity, and then Ewan McGregor gets caught, and he sets himself on fire, and the next Pope gets elected. The end. So the last 20 minutes kill the movie, but I enjoyed it.
So basically,
it was hilarious.
So he's Inspector Clouseau, is basically what you're saying. He's so stupid he doesn't realize shit's around him. Is that what you're saying, Tom Hanks is? We can finally cast the Pink Panther 3 now?
I hope to Christ we don't.
Steve Martin played this character in the Da Vinci Code instead of Tom Hanks, you know, that'd have been, at least it would have been funny intentionally.
Maybe. I don't even know if you call his work funny.
Oh, I mean, come on. He's done some funny
stuff. In Pink Panther, let me rephrase that.
I gotcha.
He was funny, but now much like De Niro, he's been, and Pacino, he's just, Martin's been doing paycheck jobs, and it's really pissing away that goodwill, you know. It's really bad. That's their prerogative, but it's a shame, quite frankly.
It's good money. I need money right now. I'll do it. Shit. I'll be Clouseau.
I saved you some money there by not seeing Angels and Demons, because I've just told you the whole movie. And I assure you, it's far more entertaining than seeing it.
You know, last night I went to see Star Trek again, and I saw some frat boys, or pre-college, pre-high school, large young men, and they were screaming, woohoo! exactly. They were screaming, woohoo! Angels and Demons! They were going inside the screening room. It's like, I never thought I'd hear that. I mean,
let me guess.
Go ahead. Sir?
Me?
I don't know. I heard Ed say, let me guess, and I'm like, all right, go ahead.
Yes.
Oh, no, I was trying to make it was a half-assed attempt at humor. Carry on.
No, you fit right in with us with our half-assed.
Exactly. Nothing is half-assed on this show.
No, not at all. I mean, if you blundered, all you gotta do is quote The Simpsons, maybe Arrested Development, and you'll be fine. I don't know if they'll watch.
Goggles, they do nothing.
Check your leash, man, because you're living in
always makes
city.
Jamie laugh.
It is funny. That is one of the great Simpson lines, is the goggles line. What's even more disturbing is how more prevalent that Radioactive Man episode is now with, one, the way we know how Hollywood and the internet are more prevalent to just mainstream culture and the overindulgence of superhero movies. That episode could have been set right now, frankly.
That and the other thing is the fact, because Fallout Boy is mentioned so much, you can't help but you unfortunately think of the band. So.
Yes. Which, if I was ever doing a band and I had to name myself after a Simpsons character, obviously you want to call yourself Smithers. I mean, that's pretty obvious. Fallout Boy, that's more obscure. I mean, I don't mind the obscurities, references and stuff, but still, really, Fallout Boy? You don't want to call yourself the Sea Captain or something, you know?
If your band is called Smithers, your album title must be called We Work Hard and We Play Hard.
All right, no, it's just Hello Smithers, you're quite good at turning me on.
Yes, that too.
My mouth tastes like burning.
Yeah.
That's what
Oh, man, there's so many good ones. Yeah, I was watching Kingsley's Homer last night, and that is, God, that's such a funny episode. Choco-tastic, you know.
Yes.
Choco-tastic!
The real reason, like, how you can tell if something has enough fat in it, just rub it against a wall, and if it, you know.
Your window of awakening.
Yeah.
That was one of the better, probably one of the last good episodes, because I know that was in the mid to late 90s.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's amazing to think. I haven't probably watched the Simpsons episode in over 10 years, in probably 10 years now. It's just, and it's been discussed many times, and it's been worked over, who knows, done to death on message boards and all sorts of other podcasts. You know, it's a show that will not end. But, you know, at this point, I mean, the show is pretty much irrelevant to me, you know.
It's so irrelevant.
I just cut it off at a certain point.
It's irrelevant. They love to bitch about Family Guy, and the only reason they bitch about Family Guy is because they stole their relevancy. I'm not giving much credit to Seth MacFarlane, because even their show has lost its relevancy due to
No, Family Guy is very tired, and I would put American Dad on top of that. They're very tired. They're not funny. And it's just, you know, it's a real waste.
Even
frankly.
Family Guy's shtick, though. Family Guy's thing used to be, we do random pop culture jokes, and then Robot Chicken stole that thunder. And their entire – they admit, like, all we do is pop culture jokes. They're upfront about that. So even they've stolen Family Guy's thunder.
But even then, their pop culture jokes seem to only stay in the 80s. And South Park did that better. But then they're recycling the same 80s pop culture a little bit to the early 90s even. I tried watching an episode of Family Guy just recently, and they did a Silence of the Lambs joke. Oh, my God. How many times have I seen that already? It's ridiculous.
I felt like I was watching Studio 60, and they were trying to say, like, oh, look, this is brilliant humor. This is the cutting edge of humor. And it's like, yeah, if it was 1996 instead of 2006. Nicolas Cage jokes. We make fun of Nicolas Cage and Juliet Lewis. Wow, that is so topical in 2006.
It's been said before, but for Studio 60, they never should have had focused on the sketches. They should have been like Entourage and focused in on the business. But even then, comedy writers were saying with Studio 60 that no one is that self-important about their job.
No.
And, I mean, there are great stories. There are fantastic stories. All you have to do is read Live from New York about all the crazy shit that went down in the Saturday Night Live offices. And that Sorkin just screws the pooch on this. That's why 30 Rock, even though it's an absurd universe, is a hell of a lot better at depicting that kind of work life than Studio 60 ever was.
Well, at least Tina Fey wrote for comedy. Granted, she was – I don't think she was particularly good on SNL. I think she found her true calling with 30 Rock, frankly, and Mean Girls. That's where she found it. But, you know, she's coming from a place of experience where Sorkin didn't. Sorkin just thought, like, I'm going to do the same shit I do with every other thing, and it'll just work. Now, despite all those criticisms, I did like Studio 60. But, yeah, its pretentiousness was look at us. We're self-important comedy writers. This is important, us writing comedy.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. I was hoping, like, if only Sorkin did, like, a show about the writers of The New Adventures of Old Christine, that would be even funnier. If, like, that's just...
Aaron Sorkin takes a look at the life of the writers of Two and a Half Men. It's hard-hitting, and it's very gritty, so... The only thing I ever liked about Studio 60 was the set. I liked the studio set, the late 80s neon, the multi-tiers, and I'm like trying to envision this studio. I thought that was the only worthwhile thing about it. Other than that, I couldn't give a crap about anything else.
I wonder what will be the next TV show that Aaron Sorkin decides to do? Because you know he's going to do another TV show. This whole film thing is bullshit. You're going to do another TV show, pal. You know, what will it be is the question.
For him, I mean, it's pretty much he's going to have to stick in government. I don't know where – because his type of work only really works well in government, maybe in some sort of volunteering community relations kind of thing. But what – or maybe – I don't know how else he's going to do it. I mean
– Hey, I got it.
Franchise? I mean
– I got it. He can do a show about a bunch of people like in, you know, in New Orleans after Katrina.
But that's being done already. That's called Train by David Simon.
Oh, it is. A guy who actually does good shows. Yeah.
Yes.
I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yes, and I highly look forward to that.
To be fair, though, that could be a case where it's like Mitch Hurwitz, where right after – you know, I mean, we assume that the dude was untouchable. He only did one show, and then he does another show, and it's terrible. Like Mitch Hurwitz had Arrested Development. Now he's got – well, he had. That show's so canceled. Sit Down, Shut Up. How do we know this won't be another, like, sophomore slump? I hope it's not. But
well,
you know.
Simon, I mean, he had The Wire, and then he also had Generation Kill, which I watched most of. I admit I was it's not his fault per se, but it's because, you know, it's a very, you know, it's hard sometimes to discern the characters, and there's not a lot of development going on. I mean, it's fascinating stuff, regardless about the invasion of the second Iraq War. But he had Generation Kill, and the guy takes his time. You know, it's very much like wondering what David Chase is going to do next.
David Chase won't do anything ever again. I get the impression he will never run another show ever again, because he seems like the kind of cat smart to be like, you know what, I'm never going to top that. I'm going to leave it. Kind of like Carson. It's like, you know what, I've peaked. I know I've peaked. I'm done.
And he doesn't need to work either. I mean,
no, he doesn't.
You know, I'd rather have him have someone be at the top of their game than leave, or rather than pull a David Milch and do a John from Cincinnati. And as much as I love seeing Ed O'Neill getting work and seeing him on the screen, that, oh my God, that was impossible to get through.
Well, I mean, Ed O'Neill also had the Dragnet reboot, which he was apparently good on.
Yeah, yeah.
You
and reunited with his co-star from Dutch, Ethan Embry, in that movie, in that show too.
Yeah,
until they got weird with it.
He can do another sitcom, man. You know, he can join the cast.
He can join
the cast of Scrubs. I mean, they need someone now that Zach Braff's left. You know, let him join the cast.
Why not? But he doesn't need to work, though, so guy's got tons of money. So.
What do you think, Phil?
Anyway,
I know nothing about American television.
Phil's scared. They have funny accents. They're talking about shows. What's
no,
hope?
I'm not.
What does whole
know.
Box office mean? You know.
No, hear what you talk about.
Does it have Robbie Coltrane in it? That's all you need to know.
Oh, that's mean. That was funny meme, but it's still just like, wow. It can't be any worse than Madonna's British accent, though, which I've never heard, actually. Everyone jokes about that, but I don't remember ever hearing her give it.
I remember it occasionally coming up, but, I mean, you'd have to have watched music television for that, and that was not good. But I think it was Guy Ritchie that said that sleep – because she had gotten very, very buff and toned, and it was like sleeping with a bag of like a leather mitt, I think it was.
Wow. I feel bad for any man who marries her, because that's clearly the man in the relationship is Madonna.
Yeah.
I mean,
speaking of Rich, though, I will say I don't really follow his work that much. I tried watching Rock and Roll, I couldn't get through it. But his thing with Downey Jr. and Sherlock Holmes, that's gonna be very interesting. That's certainly on my radar.
That is so money. I mean, like,
yeah,
it could be terrible.
Guys, do you know that the script? You can read the script on the. I looked. I was at Drew's Scriptorama the other day because I hadn't been there in a while. I was like, oh, I wonder what other, you know, lost scripts they found there. And there's Sherlock Holmes. It's there, there for reading.
Yeah, I've got the Scott Pilgrim script, you know. So.
But even then, that's no guarantee you're going to see what's on the screen. There's always going to be changes. And, you know, I think it was, as Devin Faraci had said on Chud, you know, just because you have access to the script doesn't mean, you know, you're going to see that's the movie. I mean, great example of that is with Tarantino's Inglourious Bastards. That script has been around for 10-plus years. Obviously, I highly doubt that's going to be the exact same thing on the screen.
Same with Terminator Salvation?
Hmm?
It's Same with Terminator Salvation. More so.
Well, I don't. I've never read the Terminator Salvation script. So
yeah, but apparently it buries very little of the final movie. Apparently, and of course they were doing like 8 writers doing rewrites every day. I mean, not 8 every day, but I mean they were writing that thing every day on the set, basically.
Not surprising.
And that's hard about it. It's robots fighting humans in the future. How difficult is it to write something like that?
I don't know. That's a good question.
The time travel pretzel itself. I mean, you know, you're dealing with Doctor Who-esque time travel problems here, basically. And oh man, that's something that, to bring back The Simpsons, I wouldn't touch with a 10-foot clown pole.
No, like I said on a previous show, I mean that the fans, the diehard fans of Terminator, are so loyal and so entrenched in James Cameron's vision, and they know the timeline of incidents, how it's supposed to happen inside and out. And if this movie like deviates or does something contrary to what they believe, they're just gonna hate it, and I probably will.
Does Terminator even have the kind of fan base of, say, like a Star Trek or something?
No, I highly doubt that.
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, they've got that damn TV show that's about to get canceled.
I believe that there are more Doctor Who fans than there are Terminator. There's a bigger Doctor Who fan base than there's a Terminator fan base. I imagine Phil could agree with me on this.
I agree, and actually, I just found out something awesome. Timothy Dalton is going to be in Doctor Who very soon as a bad guy, I'm going to see.
As long as he doesn't do like what George Lazenby did in the 70s and 80s, where he played a Bond-like character, his name would be James or JB or, you know, OO.
Mr. Bond.
Yeah, exactly. Mr. Bond, exactly. Which I was also watching this morning, because I have no life, basically.
Yeah.
It's, what's that? You Only Move Twice. What's that? Oh, that's terrible. Something terrible's happened. Somebody ate my lunch.
I don't remember calling
don't
you names,
think...
you jerk.
I always wanted to own the Dallas Cowboys. Oh, the Denver Broncos.
You just don't know football, Marge. Oh, my God. Speaking of great comedy, I actually was at the New Beverly last night for a midnight showing of Freaked.
Nice.
I don't know if either of you had seen that movie, it was something that I had heard about from the podcast, and that movie was unbelievably hilarious. Alex Winter was there. It was a real it was a great story of how that movie was made. It was going to be involving the Butthole Surfers band, that band, and they were going to just make it for like $750,000. They show it to, of all people, Joe Roth, the guy who made Joe Somebody, and he basically says, okay, we'll give you $11 million to make it if you can make it PG. And like, what? You know, and then – obviously, you know, leadership changes hands, and it's Peter Chernin, and the movie's only shown in 2 screens. But that movie was – that movie and Orgasmo, I got to say, are probably the two of the best comedies of the 90s.
Wow.
I have to say. Those were fantastic.
That's some bold words, man. You know, not
– I'm not saying they're the best comedies. I don't go about ranking
stuff. Oh, I know. Oh, yeah. It's dangerous to rank shit like that. I mean, the fact –
I mean,
come on, dude. Like, Curly Sue's not – like in your top 5, Jesus, you know.
Well, I respect the Belush, but I can't go that far. I mean, you know, ridiculous.
AKA how John Hughes stopped giving a shit. I would argue John Hughes stopped caring with Uncle Buck, because I've never been able to sit through that flick.
Yeah, I do remember. Yeah, that was right around that time, especially in the early 90s. Well, no, but he went from Uncle Buck to Home Alone, though.
He did.
So he picked up a little bit, and then it hit the, you know, flatlined at at Curly Sue. But I mean, I think when it comes to that guy, God, John Hughes films, it's like the guy has so much money he doesn't care. It's not like a director, as they say, a director jail situation where some director who was great just screws his own pooch and he just can never get out of it. I mean, sadly, it's kind of like that way with John McTiernan, although he's going to jail again.
Yeah. He'll be, yeah.
Let that be a lesson. Never lie to the feds. So
ever.
Yeah, ever. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I mean, the worst part is, like, if he goes to jail and, like, the people know who he is, like, his inmates, does that mean while they're raping him, they're going to, like, say lines from Die Hard or Hunt for Red October?
I don't think they're going to rape him. I think they'll have too much respect for him. Unless his cellmate decides, as soon as they open the cell door, the cellmate goes, yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker. It's like, oh, my God.
I imagine there will be some big burly dude there who says, I saw Rollerball, you owe me $12. Something like that.
Absolutely.
That's a good one. Speaking of Rollerball, the last topic I have, and it was one that Ed suggested, and it's too good to not talk about, I must say, is the official announcement that we are getting an American Gladiators movie. Thank God.
Larry Zonka's going to rise again, I tell you. He's going to come back, and he's going to rule all of us.
I used to watch that show as a kid, actually, when they had the reruns on USA Network. They said
Phil, I don't know if you know what we're talking about, Harry.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
We had a UK version, which was gigantic in this country, and everybody watched it. So I do know exactly what you're talking about.
What's it called, British Gladiators?
Yeah, so it was like UK
Gladiators. It was just called Gladiators.
Okay, fair enough.
It wasn't
enough.
Even called UK Gladiators. It was just called Gladiators.
Huh. Did they have the same theme? Dun, 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 dun,
no, no, it's completely different. We had our own song. You'll find...
One of the Gladiators was wearing a bowler hat at the time, I think.
That was funny.
I'm assuming everyone thought like it was going to be like Benny Hill, except with American Gladiators.
There's a lot of like old men getting slapped around, and you know everyone's got to run really fast.
You had Gladiators called Laser. We had Gladiators called Courtesy. Things like that. Yes, it's all hilarious.
Roll.
No, it wasn't quite like that.
It is funny.
We had ones called Wolf. They were all animals in our version. Wolf, Panther.
Okay.
Things like that.
That's
and
odd.
The women were hot. I'll tell you that much. Our female gladiators were smoking.
Were they mannish women like ours? Like in the?
I don't mean as
an American.
Page
women.
3 material here.
Exactly.
Oh, definitely. We're talking the way people felt about Ursula Andress when Doctor No first came out. That's the thing we're talking about. Real, real, real women. Wonderful women.
Get my passport lined up.
I hate to lead in with another Simpsons remark, but did any of the events in Gladiators involve the big British book of smiles?
British smiles? No. The Gladiators never smiled. They were real serious.
I don't know if ours ever smiled, but I will say that I did not watch the revamped version from last
year.
Hulk Hogan, of all people. You know.
They did that. Okay, as well, they tried to revamp it here, and I don't think it took off.
I just did. That was awkward seeing Hulk Hogan, of all people. You know, I'm divorced, brother! You know, just, I don't know. If, I would have read, actually,
that
was...
to threaten my, that I want to kill my wife. Yeah.
Exactly. Actually, that was more of a Randy Macho Man Savage, which he would have been better.
I can't do Hulk, so, you know.
Snap into a Slim Jim and shit like that.
Eat your fibers.
Oh, my God.
Gladiators. I imagine this is going to be one of those things where you get some random announcement and nothing ever comes of it. Hope to Christ that happens, because how the hell do you make a movie out of that? It's already been done. It's called The Running Man. Now
exactly.
You can do like The Wrestler, man. Do like The Wrestler, where it's like he's down on his out and this is his last chance and shit. Like do it like that. I'm sure. I bet you that was a part of the pitch for this movie. It's kind of like The Wrestler. It's like, well, who are you going to have to play the lead character? And they'll say, like, Dolph Lundgren or some other 80s has-been.
It's going to be, like, adaptation where, like, you know, Charlie Kaufman is, like, standing up. It's like, you can't adapt this. I mean, and you hear about these all the time. You hear about, like, I mean, the most famous one I can name is Ridley Scott's Monopoly. And now you have Steven Soderbergh's Moneyball, which features Dimitri Martin and some sort of animated Microsoft icon. These are books that are great, not, you know, I mean – well, Monopoly's a game, but like Moneyball is a great nonfiction work that can't be made into a movie because there's no friggin' story whatsoever. I don't know what the hell you're supposed to do. I mean, Soderbergh may do it because he has the ability to just make stuff that involves literally nothing going on. But how the hell do you make a movie involving American Gladiators that has a story is beyond me.
You could like merge them, put Monopoly with American Gladiators, and that could be your movie. And Where's Waldo?
Yeah,
to be
go.
Fair, I think you're making an assumption there that this movie has to have a story. We see plenty of movies out there these days, Fast and the Furious, for example, that don't have stories. They're just an excuse to have a certain kind of spectacle happen. In that case, car races and car wrecks. I'm sure with the flimsiest of excuses, we can have a movie up there and have 90 minutes of people racing each other in big balls and hitting each other with rubber sticks.
That is such an American
somebody
thing.
Somebody will watch it.
That is such an American thing. I'm from the South, and that is the kind of franchise that appeals to only people in my demographic. So I'm ashamed to be a Southerner when I say about that franchise, The Fast and the Furious. I'm just like, I cannot believe the first one made money. I can't believe the second one made money. The third one didn't make money. Fourth one did, and I'm sure the fifth one will as well.
Well, how do you think I feel? Because I'm here in Los Angeles, where that obviously the first and the fourth one are supposed to be set, where that car culture really comes about. And I mean, it's funny that I've never actually seen the first movie all the way through. I've only seen the first 45 minutes many, many times, because when they show it in school, you can only see it for the first 45 minutes and you leave class. So I never got around to finishing the rest of the damn movie. But apparently everyone in that universe drinks Corona, from what I've heard. So,
well, yeah, I mean, it's living by the – yeah.
I don't know. You can't really be a badass during Corona. I remember I was once tried watching Green Street Hooligans, and I immediately was thrown out of the film when I saw – supposedly he was trying to watch badass soccer hooligans. Phil, you could perhaps agree with me, because they're drinking Fosters, for fuck's sakes. I can't take a man – Aussies don't drink Fosters. How can I take a man seriously drinking that kind of beer? It's ridiculous.
I completely agree with you.
To be fair, though, you're assuming that Vin Diesel is a badass in general, and that is not the case. Did you not see his filmography?
That's very true.
I mean, I've never seen it. I mean, like, you look at some of these actors, they get hyped up, and he was one of them, and I never understood it. Like, he seemed okay.
Oh, no, I mean, it happens every few years. You had it with Vin Diesel. You had it with, like, I remember Jim Caviezel. It was like that with Colin Farrell. Basically, and I think you may have touched on this on a previous episode, where there's that overexposure.
It happened
with Ben Affleck, where basically they're jumping into way too many projects. They're all clustered together, and it causes everyone to get tired of that actor. I mean, as I said, it happened with Ben Affleck in the earlier part of this decade. It's something that Matt Damon basically avoided because he wasn't in every project around. Plus, he didn't star in Geely.
Yeah, it was Geely mostly, to be fair.
But yeah, it was that extreme overexposure that really killed it. I mean, it always has gone on. I mean, you can go – every decade has that. That's nothing new.
Well, the current victim, I say, or potential victim, and maybe you guys disagree with me, is it's Bale. I mean, especially if he ends up doing the John Carter of Mars as rumored, which Drew McWeeny of Hit Fix, that he knows his shit. I mean, like, if he says he heard something, he heard it. And my God, I mean, three franchises. I'm honestly starting to wonder that we might not even get a Terminator 5. And, like, to do, like, John Carter of Mars and Batman 3, which we don't even know where Batman 3 stands. Everyone just assumes, like, oh, that's going to happen. It's like, well, probably, but...
Yeah, I mean, yeah. It's more than likely that Batman 3 will happen, but, I mean, Nolan has said he hasn't done anything with it. It's clear it's going to be at least a couple of years before they move forward, if and when. I mean... I know Devin from Chud has talked this a lot with Bale, where he's basically playing the similar guy over and over again. I mean, he's fantastic, but I'm starting to sympathize with what he's talking about, because there's no real range. I mean, he's not wooden like Keanu Reeves. Now, for me, I'll never understand how Keanu Reeves keeps getting work, but it would help Bale a lot. I mean, I'm sure Bale would give a shit about this man's opinion, but if he got a little more range, I mean, because even in American Psycho, he was doing some, you know, hamming it up with some comedy right there, and he was fantastic in that. And
were you the one who suggested on the Chud forum that he should do like a guest spot on 30 Rock?
I don't think I made that comment.
Someone did. It was like, so that was pretty. He should like bitch at Jack
Donaghy.
That's a brilliant idea, actually.
Yeah, that would be good, and then it would be him and Alec Baldwin going face off to face. It'd be probably as good as the Will Arnett cameo, quite frankly. Just the idea of two deep-voiced gravelly guys going at each other like that. But
and hey, if you can't get Bale for Batman 3, get Will Arnett. He'll do the voice better. I'm Batman.
Yeah. I was the one who was saying that. Oh yeah, you can get Joseph Gordon-Levitt to play the Joker. Sure. And then like, oh my God, that was not. I shouldn't have not made that suggestion.
I so want to see how this motherfucker is going to do Cobra Commander. And I don't say motherfucker derogatorily. I just mean it as the guy. I want to see what that guy is going to do, if he's going to do the voice. Is he going to wear, like, the mask and shit? Like,
have you seen what he looks like?
No,
I haven't. There's been no pictures.
Yeah, that.
Yes, there has.
Where?
They released the action figure card.
That doesn't count.
What he looks like.
No. The toy is a reasonable facsimile at best. I want to see an actual screen cap, and the toy does not cut it, quite frankly. You know, if it was animated, that's one thing, but that's that's not close enough. That's I'd want to see some screen caps because I just remember – and for G.I. Joe, that's going to be a movie that's either going to be like so ridiculous people are going to enjoy it or that's going to bomb horrendously.
It is going to bomb.
Yeah, I was about to say someone told me it was going to bomb. I was like, oh, wait, it was Phil who told me that. Some dude I know, you know.
How many English guys do you know? Just
yeah.
me, exactly.
Yeah, just you.
You think you'd remember.
Yet again, I was trying to do something really witty, but no, I don't. I got
it's all right. Don't yeah. worry. Just to say about Gladiators, I'm pretty sure it's going to be sort of it's going to be an underdog story. It's going to be the story of an average guy who dreams of being a member of the Gladiators, and he goes through a brutal audition process, and they try and get in a sort of little X Factor America's Next Top Gladiator feel in there. He's got to go through a lot of trials and tribulations, problems at home, and eventually at the end he triumphs and he becomes one of the Gladiators.
So basically it's just, so wait. It's going to be like Sidekicks, that flick with like Chuck Norris and what was that name? Jonathan
Brandis, the guy who hung himself.
I'm glad that's how you know him from.
Well, Sequest, you can only – Sequest is boring, quite frankly. And
I know, but I said it was so funny. That was the first thing that came to mind. Yeah, I know that motherfucker. He hung himself.
He was in Ladybugs. He dressed up like a woman.
He did with another dead dude, Rodney.
Rodney Dangerfield in it, so –
That's the zombie movie I want to see where Rodney Dangerfield comes back and goes, brains, you know. That's what I want to see.
Oh, yeah. But so, yeah, basically the American Gladiator movie will be every friggin' sports inspirational movie out there because they've gone through every sport with the exception of maybe curling, darts, competitive darts, and I've seen that. This is true. And maybe Australian football. That's all the sports that are left. Involving the inspirational setup.
Have they ever done a movie about bowling?
Well, there's been plenty of. Well, I mean, if Kingpin counts, then yes.
Not in the inspirational.
Inspired by the end of that movie?
Oh no, that's true. Actually, when Bill Murray's comb over was meltdowning, it was fantastic. It was glorious. So.
That's funny. I got nothing else. Anybody, anything else happened this week?
Well, we've got to do memo to the executives.
Oh,
won't
yes.
take long.
Well, what franchise are we talking about this week?
Bond.
Oh, that's
James
right.
Bond.
I forgot about him. Yes, this is our second edition of Memo to the Executives, where Phil and myself and this week with Ed are going to make suggestions to the studio execs about what they should do with a franchise. This week, Bond 3 or Bond 23 or just whatever Bond you want to call it, you know. My suggestion would be not to come out in 2011, frankly, because Bourne 4 is coming out that year and you just are going to inherently ask for the comparison. A battle in the press, if you will. I think that's the dumbest thing they could do is to come out the same year as Bourne 4. That's just my opinion.
Wow. Well, I'm not sure, really. I mean, you're assuming that... You seem pretty definite that Bourne 4 will happen, and
yes.
I'm not really sure it will. I think there's a lot of factors that have to fall into place there. I really don't think Greengrass is committed to it. I think for sure if Greengrass doesn't do it, then Damon won't do it. I think that's for sure. That's my opinion, and I could be really wrong about that. And as we discussed before, I think if that falls through and Damon drops out, Universal will still go through with it, but either they'll cast a new actor... which in doing a sequel would be extremely risky because it's going to be very, very hard to find someone who will the people will accept. It really is the Connery. It's like coming out with a new Bond right after Connery. It's very, very hard. So they might do a Bourne the younger years, but you know, before his memory was erased, you know, when he was starting out.
So you're going to call it Bourne Origins and shit like that?
Oh, okay. Yes, so, you guys know what I called it when I pitched it, but we won't go into that again because I've beaten
remember.
That joke today.
Oh, yes, the Bourne placenta. I forgot about that.
There you go.
Wait a minute.
So,
I'm confused here. I thought we were talking about James Bond, and then or were we talking about James
Bond? Yeah, we get off topic.
I got thrown off there for a minute because I got nothing on Bourne, so...
No, he fights a lot. I will say about Bourne, I mean, I don't know how many times you can get away with the shtick about the shaky cam, kung fu. I mean, this will be Greengrass's third movie. I think people are, unless he's going to do a new style with it, and people are going to get tired of it. That's just my opinion on that matter.
It's interesting, though, that you talk about the Bourne comparisons, because my idea for where the next Bond should go in terms of its tone and its story would really, really help differentiate it from Bourne. I really hope the next one is, dare I say it, a little more Roger Moore-ish. Not in so much as to say that it's, you know, hilariously bad and has horrible...
I don't want
to
see any fat Southern sheriffs in the next Bond movie.
No, I completely agree with you. No alligator costumes, no Tarzan yells,
nothing like that. No slide whistle as the car jumps.
Exactly, I completely agree with you. What I simply mean to say, I really shouldn't use this expression, but really what I mean to say is I want something that's more romantic, something that's lighter in tone, just a bit lighter. I know we don't know really how well Craig can handle playing a light, unburdened Bond right now, but you know, that doesn't mean he can't. We just haven't seen it yet. It'll give him a chance to do something different. I'd just love to see something which really takes him to glamorous locations again. In the last couple of movies, he's been going to, quite appropriately, he's been going to some real shitholes. And I'd just really like him to go somewhere nice, where he checks into a lovely hotel and he fights somebody who's, you know, a really well-dressed, nice villain. And who's really, really evil and charming and gets a lot of screen time, but still, you know, lives in a glamorous palace or something. I just want to be going on a real travelogue again. And here's the most important thing. I was thinking about this a lot. I'd really, really like his next female companion, conquest, girlfriend, whatever you want to call it. I'd really like her to be an ordinary woman. Somebody who people can relate to. They keep getting these... secret agents, undercover agents, or the whatever agents you want to call them, to pair up with him because they feel, you know, they had Halle Berry was an agent, Vespa obviously was an agent, Camille was Bolivian Secret Service, who was it as well? Oh yeah, Denise Richards was a nuclear physicist, things like that. Oh, and Michelle Yeoh, she was an agent. So it's been so long since we've had an ordinary girl, you know, because they're so desperate to have a woman who's strong. Oh, my female character is going to be really strong. She's Bond's match. Bond's men is matching my character.
I agree. I am tired of hearing that, Alf. And exactly. You don't know, but you know what? It's not just the Bourne franchise. You hear it off every fucking franchise movie. You heard Katie Holmes say that with Batman Begins. And of course, all you have to do is watch that movie and go, no, you didn't.
I completely agree with you. And I just don't think. I think it's not necessary, just because you don't have to make a woman a Secret Service agent to make her strong and make her Bond's match. It's quite, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but there are plenty of strong women out there who just have normal 9-to-5 jobs. What if in this movie Bond's companion was just a regular lady who had a normal life and a normal job, and through some plot device, she gets thrown in with Bond, and she gets thrown in the ship, and she meets, you know, this amazing guy, and goes on a whirlwind of an adventure with him, and spends, you know, a whole weekend in the life of Bond, and, you know, has great sex with him, and then he has to go and leave her. And that's just the way it goes. But, I mean, that would just be so... It's been so long since we've had that it would just be fresh. In fact, I can't remember the last time we did have something like that. I really can't.
Where Bond is just nailing some random woman? I mean, that's not that good.
Bond, well, yeah, have the movie open with Bond putting a roofie with some chicks drinking.
Yeah, you know, and I myself can't say a whole lot. I admit to have not seen Quantum Solace. I did see Casino Royale. I love the new direction, obviously. I can understand because you can only have dark and gritty so much. I do... You know, agree somewhat with Phil. I don't like the idea of the Roger Moore take on, though, because that has too many pitfalls into campiness. We don't want that. I have a feeling, you know, Craig could, you know, be a bit lighter, because he was a bit lighter in Layer Cake, if I'm not mistaken. Phil, I could be wrong on this, but because he was much more of a... Yeah, he can be funny. He because he was much more of an ordinary guy in Layer Cake.
He was he was hysterical in Defiance. I was just laughing the whole time.
Even though I do find that in Layer Cake they ripped off the ending from Carlito's Way, but that's another story for another time. But you know, we'll see. I mean, I'm always of the mind, you know, because I am a little bit lacking in this area, but I would say at least with the Bond, you know, the Bond franchise, they definitely want to keep up, you know, maybe having, you know, because I've heard this, you know, idea before, the idea of having new directors with, you know, different perspectives come in. That way, you know, you're not having the same, you know, stale look. I've been told basically that Forrester's take was not very good with Solis. I mean, I could be wrong, but that's what I've heard. You know, maybe, you know, I'm not, you know, I don't want Tony Scott's James Bond, but, you know, get another, you know, relatively well-known director in there that could, you know, maybe have a different look at it. I mean, it was kind of done that with Harry Potter to a certain extent. They didn't, obviously, Chris Columbus was in the first two, but then they proceeded to get different people. I mean, you know, it still amazes me that they got Alfonso Cuarón to the third Harry, you know, Harry Potter. You know, it's something to keep in mind, I guess.
Tony Scott is too old, too. I mean, I don't say that meanly, but he was shooting a film down in New Orleans, and literally, he fell asleep behind the monitor, and they had
who wouldn't fall asleep after watching
but it was actually really cute because they had to wake him up. They said, "Hey, Tony, wake up." And they were in the middle of it. I mean, he was behind the monitor, and he fell asleep. They were in the middle of shooting.
Aww.
It's so cute, and it's like...
It's adorable.
Yeah, I know. Your brother's really Scott, isn't he?
I will say in regards to Tony Scott's next movie, Taken of Pelham 1-2-3, that's another unnecessary remake, and that's something I'll probably not
keep forgetting it's coming out.
I completely forgot, too, until you just mentioned that, Ed, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
That's odd.
But see, here's what I find interesting, guys. Dark Knight comes out last year, right? And all of a sudden, everybody's saying, oh, we've got to make things... Well, they've been saying this all the time, of course, but now they're really saying, everything's got to be dark. We're going to have something successful as a tempo. We've got to make it dark and serious and gritty, because that's what the public's responding to right now. Of course, Star Trek's just come out, and it's light and zippy and fun, and, you know, if it keeps clinging on there, maybe, you know, some people, like the Bond producers, might respond to it and say, we should do something lighter this time. We should do something that's fun and zippy and not so binned, and it's not concerned about, you know, Bolivia and its water supply. You know, just something a little lighter. So that's, you know, I'm just wondering if they might respond to that. And I just think that's the right way to go.
I think the dark difference. Argument has kind of gone out the window anyway, because, I mean, we saw, you know, Watchmen insanely underperform, and that was also a really expensive movie. They put a lot of stake into, and that didn't do well. And then you look at like a low budget comedy, like Observe and Report was also insanely dark, and that was a failure also. So,
in regards to those two, though, I mean, that was more. They were dark, but I mean, those projects were just strange beasts in and of themselves.
That's true.
And going back to what Phil was saying, you know, even though there was The Dark Knight, the other great example of something being a bit more light and playful is obviously Iron Man.
Yes.
And that played to Downey's best qualities. And it, you know, it made him basically put the capper on him basically coming back to the top. But in terms of Watchmen and Observe and Report, I mean, those are just dark movies. I mean, I think it was Nick Nunziata over at Chudhead said basically with Watchmen, it's like, well, look at what you're getting. You're getting a 2.5-hour hard R on a dense material. I mean, there was no way. I mean, you couldn't. You had to do what was done with that. But that's a discussion for another time. But I think there's definitely a place for the light and airy. I think it really depends on your character. I think some characters you can't. You're better off going with the dark and gritty thing. Other characters you're not. I know there's been talk about the Green Lantern movie. I've never really followed Green Lantern, but I'm of the mind that you're probably going to want to have something a little bit more light and airy for that sort of thing. I don't know. But there's a lot of DC characters like that. But that's another discussion for another time, frankly.
Anything? You got anything, Phil?
No, that was pretty much all I
wanted to say. That was pretty good, actually. That was a good that was really good. I don't really have anything to top that with, actually, as a matter of fact. That was a very good answer.
It's so early days on it now. I mean, we can't possibly think we're Bond. Of course, there's one question I would like to ask you guys.
Okay.
Which director would you like to see direct it?
I don't know. I would like to see an American handle it. They won't give them to Americans. They're very prudish towards it.
Right.
I don't see why not. I mean, obviously, let's not give it to Brett Ratner, although I'm not a Ratner hater. I don't – or McGee or somebody. Let's – you know, like –
If you give it to him, it'll never get made.
Yeah, nope. So exactly. There you go.
I'm of the mind that if you're going to give it to an American director, give it to the one who wanted to do it in the first place, and that's Tarantino. The problem with Tarantino – maybe he would actually be able to do it. See, the thing is with Tarantino, much in the same way of like Guillermo del Toro and like all. Tarantino's basically the original one of like basically he's saying he's going to do a project he never gets to, and that's why there's like 20, 30 projects that the guy's never going to get to, but he sometimes talks about. But I'd have the feeling if push came to shove, and the guy isn't, as I always like to say, smoking pot and eating Cap'n Crunch, you know, he would be able to really do, you know, do something with Bond. And I don't necessarily think he would have his Tarantino-isms with it either. I think he, you know, he definitely respects the franchise. So I don't have the feeling you're going to see lots of shots of women's feet and, you know, really out of the way pop culture references. More importantly, shots of women's feet. I think, you know, that would be. I think you'd really get something special out of that.
Because
he wanted to do Casino Royale for a real long time too.
And as a prequel, it was going to set in the '60s. He said, I remember, with Pierce Brosnan, which is like what? Like I get putting it, setting it after. On Her Majesty's Secret Service, that made sense, but like, I don't know, dude, setting it in the '60s deliberately, like that's a little weird, you know?
Which is exactly why they wouldn't.
Well, for other reasons too. I mean, I'm sure there's more to it, but I mean, I would, you know what? I'm gonna think outside the box. I'm gonna say let's give it to like a Bryan Singer type, you know? I'd be curious to see what old Bryan had in mind for Bond, because he's of the right generation who grew up with the, you know, Phil, you mentioned the Roger Moore stuff. I could see Bryan Singer sort of going back to like a Spy Who Loved Me type Bond film. I could easily imagine that.
Mm.
You know,
I mean, let's be realistic. We're not going to have
point.
Go ahead.
Let's be realistic. We're not going to have Paul Thomas Anderson's James Bond. That's not going to where it's going to be all Steadicam shots and omnipresent songs coming through, but
sadly, you know.
Yes.
But the point of this segment is not what we think is going to happen, but just what we basically. This is dream weaving, Ed. This is what we want to happen.
That's true.
This is heading for the stars. Personally, at the risk of somebody tying me to a chair and whipping my testicles, I think that I would like to see Ron Howard have a go.
Ooh.
I think.
You're fired! Get out!
Yeah, exactly. No, you've got to do that like
Josh. Go enjoy your Angels and
Demons. No, Ron Howard is too generic in my view. If you're going to go with Ron Howard, you might as well just go with Bryan Singer. That
see,
to me seems.
I just think my view on Ron Howard is.
Is that a distal point, Justin? Go ahead.
Ron Howard is simply one of those directors who, if you give him a shit script, he'll give you shit. If you give him a great script, he can give you something great. I love Frost Nixon. I think that was a great movie, and he did a great job with it. I think Ron Howard would be perfect for the kind of lighter Bond movie that I'd like to see. I hate Willow. I absolutely detest Willow, and I, you know, but I still like Ron Howard. I just think I'd like to see, obviously, Dream, Ultimate Dream, Fincher, and not Finch, sorry, Darabont. Give it to Darabont. Give anything to Darabont.
Oh, that, no, I imagine he'd be very capable with that.
I forgot about Darabont. That is my dream, actually, is Darabont.
That's very good, actually. That's very, very good. Because, I mean, not only that, the guy would probably shoot for cheap, too. So, you know.
Well, see, I would be okay with giving this man a budget, though. You can give him $100 million. He's a professional. You know, I mean, certain people you don't want to give just a blank check to because it's going to bite you in the ass.
Right.
But certain other, you know.
He could work that – oh, sorry, but he can work that genre material. You're not going to give it to something like this to Jody Hill. That'd be a little odd. So –
which would be okay by me, just to say that they made it for bragging rights. That'd be awesome, but you
it's
know.
Gonna be an extended scene because it's Jody Hill's James Bond, where James Bond proceeds to cuss out the manager of the Chick-fil-A.
And James Bond is played by Danny McBride.
That's right.
I'm afraid we don't have Chick-fil-A's in this country, so it really wouldn't translate to the European market.
We'll
but other than that, we'll
change it to fish and chips. We'll get
around. For God's sake, will you stop with this? This is just – I'm outnumbered here. I've got two guys who have absolutely no understanding of my country or its cultures. I'm really defending an entire country here, and I've got better ways to spend my Sunday nights, quite honestly.
And yet you don't.
And then I don't. No, you've got me there. But anyway, apart from the last 3 minutes, this was a lovely edition of Memo to the Executive.
Yeah, it was a nice edition of Movie Moan. I think we're going to wrap it up. That's a good way to end it on this week. Ed,
Absolutely. Sir,
thank you for joining us, man. You will have to come on again and do this
I will definitely do that. It was certainly a pleasure. We're talking with both of you, and we should definitely try and do this again the next time around.
Absolutely, we will hold you to that, sir. And now let's give a plug out to the podcast you're trying to join. So
That'd be the Podcaust. That's Podcaust. It has nothing to do with the Holocaust. Want to make sure, because that's a running joke with them, those guys. But it's you can just type in Podcaust on Google. It'll come right up. But and it's on iTunes. All you have to do is type in Rob Hughes. You'll find it. It's very entertaining. I'm sure you know the guys will enjoy the free plug, and at some point you'll get to hear me sound like Agent Smith on one of those podcasts anyway. So.
Oh, that'll be awesome, actually. Yeah,
it exists too. That's what you get when you call when you have a head cold, actually.
Ooh, that's funny. I will listen to that actually. But yeah, fucking seriously, let him join your goddamn podcast. It'll be even better than it already is. Damn it.
Right.
But all right, thank you, sir. Phil, wrap it up, sir.
Oh shit, I've got to think of a Simpsons quote to end on. Oh, fuck it, no, I've got none.
Don't worry, Ed and I will think of something real quick.
Oh, Milhouse, we're going to do the Jiminy Jilicus scene just one more time. We already did it. We did five takes, but there we are, that'll have to do it.
I loved also, we cannot not mention that episode without mentioning Mickey Rooney.
Yep.
Jiminy Jilicus, we're shutting down production.
Go get 'em, scouts.
Oh, that's right.
Don't be afraid to use your nails, boys.
Look, I think we should cast the original actor. Kids would love it. Look, he's 87 years old, and he's dead. I know, but still. So we could keep going, but we're not. We're going to stop right now. But
yeah, it's a good way to go.
It's been very fun. We'll see you next week. Thanks, guys. Okay. Bye.
All right.
Bye. I bet my Wookiee.